Hey, batter, batter.
Are you ready to hit a home run with flavor? Step up to the plate and swing by Penn Station East Coast Subs, where every bite is a grand slam. Craving a classic Philly cheesesteak or maybe a savory chicken teriyaki? Or how about loading up on their delicious fresh-cut fries? Call it a triple play by ordering Penn Station's signature fresh-squeezed lemonade. When it comes to subs, Penn Station is the big league. Order online at penn-station.com or stop at a store near you. Penn Station East Coast Subs.
It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock.
Come on, son.
Hello, and welcome to the Fighting Cock podcast, season 12, episode 24. Today we've got Ricky and John on the podcast. And Spurs won.
Hi. Woo! Yeah.
Didn't see that coming. Did not see that coming.
Nope.
We're going to go into that. Tottenham finally win a game. I can't believe it. I mean, we won Leeds back in November. It feels like, the mood around it, it stunk. And now suddenly everything, it's not all roses, but it feels so much better. We finally score a goal first. We finally don't concede two goals. We finally look good. In the second half, we look really, really good. I said, where's this happened? First time since last season. Look really, really good. And the other question we've got to ask is, did Sky dip the volume on Spurs fans when they were singing anti-Levy songs? Some people say that didn't happen. They got drowned out by the fans. Some say it did. But before that, got to tell you about a sponsor, NordVPN. This is a bit of software that allows you to circumnavigate geolocked content like football or wrestling, boxing. Do you like pay-per-view boxing but don't want to pay pay-per-view prices? Use NordVPN to go to another country where it's not pay-per-view and buy that. You can save money on Netflix. You can save money on flights. You can save money on car rentals. You can take advantage of if you take advantage of NordVPN, you can save money on absolutely fucking everything. Like, if you use it properly, it will save you so much more money than it costs. You can get Netflix in Mexico or some place. Just use NordVPN. Go to Mexico or Mozambique, where it's 99p as opposed to 14.99, whatever it is in the UK, and you'll pay 99p every. And you'll get loads of Mozambique films as well if you want to watch those.
Perfect. There's literally no downside to that.
And NordVPN was named Times Magazine's best invention in the applications and software category. I might just leave that bit out.
You should.
I think NordVPN asked us to put it in. They don't want misinformation going out. But to me, it's the best invention.
Well, that's still amazing if you think about all the apps and software, which is basically all the best stuff in the modern world. Like all the other inventions from like penicillin, that's not in the list. That was years ago. So this is like of all the apps, so that's all the best stuff. That's like Uber. And
I think it's better than
like
penicillin.
Deliveroo and that, right?
Because
in a way it is.
Like the fucking viruses are getting around the antibiotics now, aren't they? Half of them are not even working. Penicillin was good once. Is it any good now? NordVPN's good now. So
that's what I mean.
Swings and roundabouts.
That's what I mean. All the best stuff now is applications and software. So if it's the best of the best thing now, and it is just the best.
What is penicillin anyway? It's mushrooms or fungus or something.
Yeah, it's not like you invented it. You just let something grow.
It's everywhere.
Mold.
You can't claim it.
It's mold,
yeah, you can't claim
mold.
You can't claim to. Are you claiming you invented mold?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Just go NordVPN.
Go down the local woods. There is mold everywhere. Ergo, there is penicillin everywhere. NordVPN isn't everywhere. It can be. It can be for the price of a pint, a London pint. Can be on your phone, can be on your PlayStation, can be on your PC. And to get a huge discount or NordVPN deal and a bonus gift, go to nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. Do that. Go on our landing page so we get the credit for your sign up. It's completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. Right, Crystal Palace. Oh, God. I've never gone... I went from basically, I think I might hate Tottenham. I think I might fucking hate Tottenham. To, I think we can beat Arsenal in the space of 15 minutes. We fucking needed that. John, we needed that.
We really did need it. I I was just reflecting back on basically my thought process in the run-up to the game, and saw the team come out, and I tweeted something about, like, other top six clubs would have more options, and they'd play youth team players, and I was proper negative. And then about a minute before kickoff, I just thought to myself, yeah, but all of the shit that's going on, everything that's frustrating me, fundamentally, when this game kicks off, I'm going to be invested. I want us to win. I want us to win well, because we're not cut adrift this season, despite what people have said around. You know, we're not going to finish in the top four. It's like, there's a long way to go. We were always in touch and distance, but we need to start getting wins. And so I just kind of like put a tweet out into the ether, just saying, like, we know there's loads of shit going on, but come on, like, let's just win. And it put me in a kind of positive mind space leading into that game. And I'm sure we'll get into the details of the game, but afterwards it has left me in the place of, like, you can get caught up so easily in all the negativity around the club and around everything else that's going on at the moment. But fundamentally, like, what happens on the pitch is what's really important. And when we play well, you've got to enjoy that. Otherwise, what's the point, right? It's like, we get upset when it's shit, and rightly so. If you can't enjoy it when it's good, literally, what is the point?
Well, I want to come on to that shortly, because we put a couple of tweets out after the game just celebrating the performances of Hill and Pape Sarr. And, like, some of the responses we got were just like, man, just enjoy it a little bit. Like, I know Brian Hill was lightweight. I can see him. He's tiny. I understand that. But, like, let's just enjoy it a little bit right now, can we? Because it's been fucking shit for ages. But they're like, no. No, you're not going to enjoy this. You're not going to celebrate Brian Hill, because he doesn't weigh enough. So we're not allowed to tweet about him then, because he doesn't weigh enough.
The kind of the joy of, obviously, we've been on a pretty shit period. And we're all waiting for, obviously, the World Cup to finish and then get Tottenham back. And hopefully they had been working on stuff behind the scenes and we'd come back better than ever. And obviously it didn't go that way. We probably thought we'd get a result at Brentford. We didn't. Got a draw, which actually looks quite handy now. Losing at home to Villa. And not only just losing, we just played fucking terribly. It was like, it was abysmal from start to finish, and we're at home, so we really didn't know what we were gonna come out with at this game. And going to Palace, always going to be a tough game. They've got some decent fans, and they cause a lot of noise, and I just didn't know what Tottenham would turn up. But just going back to that bit of just enjoying it, I mean, at the moment, like, I kind of see on social, is Hill the answer? Is Sarr the answer? Is this person that, you know, should we stop worrying? Should we not go into just fucking enjoy it, man? Let's just couple this question. This morning when I was putting the telly on for the kids to watch their breakfast, just creating football chants in my head, like, stick the remote. Oh, no. Like, just everything's just going. And then, like, my missus walks in, she walks out. Wait, can see you sneaking out. It's got nothing to do with anything, but you're just fucking buzzing, man. Just get amongst it. Worry about that stuff later. Drinking the 4-0 now. Drinking the fucking clean sheet. Look, it's all right.
It's okay to celebrate a result and still have issues with the squad. It's okay to celebrate a result and still have issues with Enoch and Daniel Levy. If you're celebrating a result, doesn't mean you're not Enoch out, or you are Enoch out, whatever it might be. John, I've got a question here from Richard DeForges, and he's one of our, I think that's how you say his name, he's one of our patrons. He says, has anything changed, or is this just what happens when we get the first goal? First time in 9 games, I think it was, that we scored first.
I think there were actually a few things that were different about this, like, performance in general. And I think there are also things that could potentially long-term be positive things. Rick touched on it a minute ago, which is, like, is this player the answer? Is that player the answer? When you're talking about players like Gil, Hill, whatever, however you pronounce it,
you know, and it's Sarr coming in. You know it's Hill. You made a mistake. You know it's Hill. Or however you pronounce it.
Yeah, no, what it's bloody like. Anyway, those players coming in, Sarr, for example, right? I think there's, like, again, this immediacy of someone's come in, they're the future, they're brilliant, that's the problem solved. I think our wider issues are a bit bigger than just can this come in and transform our season. the reason that I think I was really encouraged about what I saw and why this is maybe different and maybe there is a change is that that's like the first time we've seen he'll have two games in a row, essentially, and actually get some meaningful minutes. And I think we saw that against Villa, he was a bit rusty. There wasn't like wasn't loads to cling on to there. Was a bit of a nothingness performance. But we have seen prior to that, when he played in Europe and he's had a bit of a run, him do look a bit more positive. This was like a chance for him to really make his mark. And I think we saw over the 90 minutes, he had a few spells that were a bit quieter and gave the ball away for 20-minute spells. But in general, he looked really positive. Then, you know, Skip coming into the side, I didn't think, again, he was amazing, but I think it was something different. We've been very, like, kind of set in our ways in the way that we're playing. He is slightly different to what we've seen there. And he injected a little bit, particularly in the first 10 minutes, of kind of forward passing and being on the front foot and just trying things a little bit different to what we've seen with Højbjerg and
especially
Bissouma.
Yeah,
Bissouma. And obviously, when Bentancur's there, it's slightly different because I think he does elevate us. But the wider point here is that I think Conte is, whether it's by design or whether he's just kind of by necessity, having to play players that he obviously doesn't fancy or hasn't previously fancied or didn't think was ready and now does think is ready. And I think this like sprinkling of players who've been on the periphery, who are chomping at the bit, who are like excited to play for us and are desperate to get minutes and are desperate to prove themselves. I think like a blend of experienced players, ideally in form, plus players who are hungry, just makes a team a little bit better. And I think that that's like maybe what we've seen in this performance is the start of a bit of a process where we might start seeing some of these players get a bit more time and will ultimately help the squad. I don't think any of those players I mentioned will be like player of the year next year or like will be the best player for us the second half. But I think it does represent options so that when Kulu, Richarlison, Bentancur come back into the side, that these players are viable options off the bench or can exactly rotate, which I don't think we've seen that before. That's what encouraged me after this.
Well, also the fact that everyone knows Brian Hill isn't starting for Spurs if Kulusevski's fit. Same with Pape Sarr. If Bentancur or Bissouma are fit, then he doesn't get on. But he was asked to do a role when he came on. So was Brian Hill. And based on what they do, given the fact that what level they're at currently, they're not Premier League quality, certainly not top six quality, but they came in and did a good job and made a good account of themselves. It doesn't matter if he's too light or Pape Sarr. One bloke on Twitter said, what did he do? Well, I mean, actually what he did was come in and shore things up. He had a role of responsibility there for 20 minutes against a team that at that point was still trying to get in it. He carried the ball well. He didn't lose it. It was sensible for a young player who essentially his first proper minutes in the Premier League. You couldn't ask more from it. But there are groups of fans out there that go, no, I want to see more. I want to see Yaya Toure now. I mean, forgetting that this is a kid who just got relegated with Mets in the league, in the French league.
Like, with Sarr as well, he made some good tackles. But like when you're a young kid and you're being thrown into the first team on telly, under the lights, bit dodgy atmosphere and you know things can go against you. It's doing the basics that really kind of that you can be applauded for, because he could have easily been a nervous kid coming in and give off some short passes, didn't do this, got carded, whatever it might have been. But he kept a level head and he did what was necessary, kept the ball moving, made his tackles, did what he needed to do. And like you were saying, he did progress the ball and he ran forward with the ball as well as passing forward with the ball. And no, it wasn't fucking a Ginola-esque performance, because he's not that type of player. And what you like, it's just not going to happen like the first game. Like they need to build up a rhythm and understanding and all of that. But It was good enough for us to be like, do you know what? In like a handful of games, he can come in and he can do a job, or that Conte thinks he can trust him and he can pull Højbjerg off. I couldn't say that with a straight face, pulling him off. Fuck's sake, he can pull him off on 70 minutes and give him a rest for 20 minutes. No, he's got a safe pair of hands that will see the game out and will be level-headed. With going back to Hill, that admittedly in the first half I thought he was pretty poor,
Yeah, it was average. Five out of ten.
Two out of ten.
Right, okay,
nah.
good.
I kind of felt that when we were putting, I mean, when we were trying to get the move the ball up the pitch to him, he was just out-muscled. When he had the ball, he was pushed off quite easily. And when he was trying to kind of a final pass, he was just leaning back slightly. It just wasn't falling for him, wasn't working out. And I just felt like he was quite anonymous, really.
Yeah.
But come the second half, it was a complete change. I don't know whether the game opened up a bit more. I don't know whether he got more confident.
I think all of them were just playing more confidence, and he feeds off it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Not having to make things happen. He can feed off a general energy and a movement of other players.
Like the first goal, he rode the tackle well. Yep. Like one of the centre backs came out, and he could have easily hit the floor. He could have easily looked for the easy pass and put it back to someone in centre midfield. But he looked out to his right and played it to Perisic, who put a delicious ball in.
I think it's called a pre-assist.
Fucking hell.
He got a pre-assist.
It's an expected pre-assist ratio. It's unbelievable.
It was great. And then on I think it was Kane's second goal where he threaded the ball through the two defenders. Nice, again, simple pass, put a very decisive pass. And then Kane, that fucking finish was insane.
I want to go on to Kane, but before we do this, these were Conte's comments on Brian Hill. So while, obviously, I think the vast majority of Spurs fans out there understand that Hill is under or he's lightweight. This is what he says. It was important. We were talking about a player born to play football. He understands football so quickly. He's so clever. The league is so difficult. Quality. You have to be fast and have endurance. He has that. And you also have to be strong physically. Hill, since last season, has improved on that aspect. I compared him to Bernardo Silva of Manchester City because, in my opinion, they are really similar. He has to continue to work on the physical aspect because he has a great quality. He doesn't even feel like he's grown into his man body yet. And maybe you never will have a man body.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but that's fine. But I think the Bernardo Silva comparison is a good one because, like, I remember when he first... Actually, we played against him when he was at Monaco, and he fucking tore us a new one.
Bernardo Silva.
Yeah.
He was slight then.
Yeah, he was really slight then. And since he's gone to City, like, he has obviously developed that part of the game. And I do think with Brian Hill, I just think like this whole, oh, he's lightweight, so therefore that's it, shit forever.
Yeah,
it's like
when
Kane broke through, and it's like, oh, he's not fast, so he's shit forever. It's like, well. But players adapt, they'll make the most of that. He might never be strong, like what's his name? Bruno Fernandes at United's fucking pussy, goes down under zero pressure. He's not strong. Like, there are loads of players who have one major fault, like too short, too tall, too slow, whatever it is, right?
They find a way of adapting. Like, Modric was tiny, is tiny,
exactly.
Is tiny. He's a weird little tiny specimen of a man, and yet he's one of the greatest midfielders that we've ever seen in the modern age. Because they find a way. Great players find a way. You've got to give him a chance. Find a way. Just say he's too lightweight. Fuck him off. Get him out.
Do you not find, like, that is an absolute ringing endorsement from Conte on Hill?
Absolutely. Because I thought you'd be one of the first out the door, Rick. And for him to now say that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's amazing for him to say that. But does it not make you think, well, why the fuck ain't you played him sooner? Why is he not featured sooner?
Like, maybe
you can say all these amazing things. I know, but I don't know.
Do you not find it interesting, Rick, but he worked with Brian Hill and more specifically worked with Pape Sarr, and they've both seen minutes? Maybe it's about injuries. He doesn't rate Spence. He's shit, isn't he?
I don't think he's shit. I just think...
Hey, shit. Come on. We all know it now.
He's just saying he's Levy signing, isn't he? Pick you.
I don't believe that. I genuinely.
No, I do. I like to create these stories.
Good. Well, it's not. I mean,
he makes him train on his own. Yeah. Like, when everyone's laughing, he says, "Jed, I don't want you laughing when everyone else is laughing.
Yeah,
laughing your own time.
Yeah,
not during training.
Yeah.
He gets his coffee order just slightly wrong. It's like, oh, I'll have a caramel latte with oat milk, and he gives him soy milk. Like, no. just little fucking jabs just to fucking piss him off.
That is so Spence, though. Doesn't follow it to a T, that's why.
There's no chance if there is zero chance, and we've talked about this before, so we don't have to go into it in any depth, but there is zero chance that if Spence was good enough to play in Conte's system and understood what he needed to do, then he would be playing.
That's not true. That's not true. I'll tell you why. Because on this very podcast earlier this week, when we were talking about Conte being stubborn, and Mark was telling us about, oh, he was playing a certain way, and then he had to, because he was forced to, play Eriksen, and it transformed their season. Now, he had Eriksen the whole time, and he didn't play him when he had him available.
He was winning without
him. If we didn't know that Eriksen was a good player.
They won the league that year. They were winning without him.
Yeah, but the second half is when he came into the squad is what transformed their season. So everyone tells me as the reason why we need a creative midfielder. Well, I'm using that exact same argument to back up this point, which is that if he had no right backs, like if he had no right wing backs, if they were both injured, would he see minutes? Like potentially he would, in which case we would actually find out whether or not he's a good player or not. The fact is, I do think like there is some element of him just going, well, I have two other options, which is quite a lot, right? So he doesn't actually have to play him at all. And he didn't want him. It's a quote-unquote club signing. So I do think he has created a narrative, because the amount of time he's been given is honestly pathetic, considering like Emerson's performances and Doherty at times. Doherty was excellent yesterday, by the way.
Yeah.
But we've seen like next to no time from Spence. And I don't think it's because he's rubbish, and if he was good, he'd play. Because that example of Eriksen being excellent and only getting in the team through injury and then proving to be excellent sort of illustrates the point. Conte is a stubborn man, by his own admission, is like that. So I think it's sort of, we'll never know until he gets a run of games. And if he gets a run of games and he's shit, then fair enough. But just give him a try. That's all I'm saying. It's not like we have Cafu playing week in, week out, and we're calling for some unknown kid. None of them have really ripped up trees. So it would have been great to see him. And I think maybe if Saar, Hill, Skip start performing well over the next few weeks, maybe it will make him go, ah, okay, like maybe these players need to play for me to really see how good they are.
I'm going to change my opinion. Like earlier when Flav said maybe he's not, just not getting it tactically and stuff like that, and I was like, yeah. That was very good, John. So I'm switching to John's camp here.
Yes,
so
right. Yes.
I'm fickle. I will change my mind like nobody's business. Right, so... And I'm lit on a podcast to talk about Tottenham.
I'm let on. You've only been here for 12 years. They let me on again.
Just change my mind all the time.
Fucking it's fine. That's what you're prerogative, isn't it? We've got a question here from the North Remembers, Lane_THFC. He says, hold or loan, Saar and Hill. I think Pape Saar should be given a loan. I think Hill we need just as a backup. Championship loan, toughen him up, all that cliched bollocks. John?
Yeah, I'd definitely keep Hill, because I think we need an alternative to Kulusevski. Doesn't mean he's as good as him, but I just think he's a good alternative, and he's proven that he's got something. So I think we've just got a lot of similar players. Like we have a lot of central midfielders. I do think he did offer something a little bit different. They're all kind of similar, but all a little bit different. So I don't think it makes much of a difference, but it would make a difference to him to get minutes. So yeah, maybe like lower half Premier League, like a relegation scrap dogfight wouldn't be the worst. Just ideally somewhere where he's going to play in a similar system to what we're trying to achieve, or at least a similar formation, just so that he's really getting some benefit from that. Because if we put him out to loan somewhere where they play a completely different system, then you've got to start again with Conte and go, oh, he needs to learn the system. So,
I think a championship
smart loan.
I think championship loan, QPR, someone like that.
Yeah.
Just get him.
Yeah.
I do agree to a certain extent, but like if we look at the team yesterday, if Saar and Hill were both out online, who the fuck would we have been playing? Well, like, literally, looking at the subs bench, there was not an attacker at all that could have come on for...
No, he'll definitely won't be loaned out. But Saar, if you've got Bissouma, Skip, Bentancur, and Højbjerg, then Saar
should be enough.
Should be enough. Should and Sarr won't see a minute, and it's better for his development long term and Spurs' benefit, I think, if maybe. Yeah, but if he gets loaned out, wouldn't have any issue with that. Harry Kane is 2 goals off of Jimmy Greaves' record at Tottenham, which is insane. Like, we all knew he was going to get there, but the fact that he is 3 goals away from breaking it. The 2 goals last night were just as soon as Perisic dinked that up, and basically as soon as he received those balls, you knew there were goals. The second one was so Harry Kane, it was unreal. Like, getting it a bit and smashing it across the keeper, turning into tight spaces. He could have had more. His game has been, he's been so isolated for so long for Spurs. You know, against Villa, didn't touch the ball, as we discussed, first 19 minutes, wherever it was. And again, in the first part, he had little moments, but it just felt like we weren't kind of clicking. And then he suddenly started dropping back and getting involved. He did it throughout the whole of the second half, but for parts of the first half as well, he suddenly started getting involved and dropping and being. And I don't know if it was a tactical thing or Conte asked him to start to become more involved in the build up, but he was so much more back to himself. And I think a lot of people might say, yeah, well, it was Crystal Palace. The defence is weak. There's been multiple times we've gone to many places with teams much worse than Crystal Palace and our forward line has been isolated. So you can't take that away from it. I thought he was by far and away the best player on the pitch. But the 2 goals were insane. And obviously, I don't know if he'll get the assist for Sonny's goal. But over, and there's not more we can say about Harry Kane that we haven't already. But do you think... Do you think he'll play against Portsmouth? Rick, would you play Harry Kane against Portsmouth, knowing that we have the North London derby the week later?
Personally, I wouldn't play him, but I think he will be played. I don't think he will start, but I think he'll probably get a run out because I know it's not a what you're kind of supposed to do, or it's a gesture, really, a gesture kind of run on for 10 minutes where. The fan base for the Portsmouth game, there's going to be a lot of new fans, going to be a lot of families, you know, people can actually get tickets and shit like that. It's a good day out, FA Cup, Portsmouth will be bringing a lot of people.
8,500 they've got.
Exactly. So they'll expect, or they would like to see these elite players, really. And everyone wants to see Harry and Sonny. And I think sometimes that you can... you would just play them for like the last 10 minutes or whatever.
I don't. Do you think that's what Conte will do?
I don't know. I think he might. He could start him. He could start him. He's fucking mental, mate. Yesterday he was one yellow card away from missing the derby.
Get him off.
We were 4-0 up on 70 minutes or something like that. Get him off. No. It's going to play him right to the fucking end. Fucking mental. Game off.
He's 100% going to start our strongest team against Portsmouth without a shadow of a doubt. It's a week until the Arsenal game. To him, he'll just see like that's minutes, that's fitness. He will play our strongest team.
Oh, God.
I don't think Bentancur and Kulusevski will be ready, but he will play our strongest possible team, I think.
Yeah, I was just looking at that because I was thinking, well, it's obviously a game this weekend and then maybe we must have a midweek game, but we don't. So it is a full week's recovery. So... Yeah, there's always a risk, like a player could play in a game that you don't think he needs to play in and they get injured, but they could get injured in training, like it can happen at any time. And if you go in with the mentality of trying to put players in cotton walls, like often that's actually a bit of an issue. So you'll get some minutes. Also, we don't have an option. We have no option. Like you either play Kane up front or you play Son up front at the moment because we've no Richarlison either. So either one of those two is going to have to play... majority, even if you give them 45 minutes each, right, still 45 minutes against a team that's probably going to pick lumps out of them. So it's not really an alternative. So I do think they'll probably, both of those two will get minutes. And I don't necessarily think it's the worst, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. Because
it's part of that.
Smash Portsmouth.
If they get injured, it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it is. I don't think, how have we got ourselves in this position? Like where Harry Kane is literally the only recognised striker. I know, but apart from that, though, like, I mean, Richarlison, all right, he'll take over Kane, but like, there should be someone else, no?
What, free forward? Do you want free? We've had Kane on his own for 12 years.
I know, it's fucking mental. That's what I'm saying.
No one like, decent.
Why
have
we not addressed this?
Well, no one worth their salt would, a proper number nine, would come to Tottenham with Kane there. Danny Ings wouldn't even come to Spurs if Harry Kane was there. What's, why would they? We've had this.
We've not got a child in the youth set.
Well, yeah, we have. His name's Dane Scarlett, but he's on loan to Portsmouth. I don't think he can play against us, can he?
I think we've actually said he can't.
You're not allowed.
I think that was one of those, yeah, you're not allowed.
How's he done this season?
He was scoring goals at the beginning of the season. He was doing all right.
Let's have a little butcher's hook, shall we?
But Dane, I haven't.
I can tell you, I'm just that's the beauty of the fucking. Do you know what do you think Damon? Not Damon. Can't you say his name? Dane Scarlett's value is currently
5 million.
8 million.
His value, as according to transfermarket.co.uk, 2 million euros.
Fuck.
Fuck all, basically.
Wow.
I'm worth 2 million euros. 37-year-old sluggy striker, John Bass, available for less than 2 million euros.
Slimitar Bergatov.
Slimitar. Do a job.
In League One for Portsmouth, he's had 21 appearances. He scored 3 and assisted 2. If I want detailed performance data, I have to pay for it. So you fucking do it.
Can you just imagine, you know, like Rooney broke Charlton's record after like years and years and years and no one thought it was ever going to happen. And then Kane's just come along and just fucking done it like straight away. Imagine Dane Scarlett just fucking breaks through into the Spurs first team and then just like Kane beats Greaves' record and then Scarlett just beats it. Straight away. Like, can you imagine how fucking mental that'd be? Just to have 2 players in a row just like fucking do it. After all that time, like just comes in and just Kane's for like this record stood for fucking decades and he's just come and blitzed it straight away. Holds it for like 2 seasons. So mental.
It'd be incredible.
It'd be so funny.
How good would it be if Kane starts against Portsmouth and then goes into a North London derby and breaks the record? We'd need to win as well, that's the thing. Or at least draw.
Yeah.
But what an achievement. Unreal. Unbelievable.
He'll have that in the back of his mind for sure. Like he always plays it quite coy, is to say like, oh yeah, I know these results and these goal tallies and all that lot of there, and he's nearly breaking them but he just kind of puts it to the back of his mind. I'm just here, take it game by game to score. You know, you could break that against our most hated fucking rivals and you can take the roof off that stadium.
Fucking loves a goal against Arsenal.
Go and do it, son. Go and do it.
Yeah, mate, 100%.
Fucking lovely.
Just back to the game yesterday. Now, there's a bit of controversy, wasn't there?
Let's go.
Come on, let's go! So obviously the Enoch out movement it feels like it's gaining weight. I think it was very audible at times, Daniel Levy, get out of my club chants. Now, when we were watching it on telly, it sounded like to all of us, right? It wasn't just me, because I tweeted it and loads of people went, no, they weren't chanting that. It was drowned out by the other Spurs fans. That may be the case, but from watching on TV, it definitely sounded like they just suddenly dipped the volume, didn't it? Because there's one thing drowned out, but there's another thing, it just went like it was gone. You can understand where I was. It wasn't just me, others were saying as well.
No, completely. It was really loud, and it wasn't like it tailed off. It was like halfway through, just cut, just straight dead.
It's like someone dipped the volume or something.
Yeah, it was. It did sound like that. And I'm not fucking, I'm not going to be like, oh, like Anthony Levy and pro Levy and get into all of that. But if you want me to give my opinion on what I heard, that's exactly what it sounded like. That it was fucking loud and then it wasn't trailed. I didn't hear singing over it. It was just cut, dead.
It was
that's
so
what
weird.
It sounded like.
Because that's, and I'm like, and again, like as we discussed, I'm not Enoch out. But if that is the case, which the more I talk about it, the more I say it, the more outlandish it seems. Like, why? What would be the purpose? Why would they do it? And then, but if fans have their rights, whether you agree or not, to vocalise what they're feeling, and if there is a group of them large enough to sing that song, the broadcaster should not mute it. It's like, it's mental. It's almost fucking, it's like, you know, it's draconian.
Censorship, kind of. Yeah, kind it's of, weird. Yeah. I so I also, again, just like no viewpoint on the singing, but just what I heard was exactly what you described. It was like they went, oh, quick, turn that down. That's mental. but the issue that I've got is like with these sort of things, you try and look for like the motivation behind why they would do it. And normally Sky would fucking love that, right? Because it's controversy. It's like Spurs fans aren't happy at their ownership and you know, they're singing against Daniel Levy. And, you know, Sky have been very critical of Levy and Spurs. So this doesn't make sense, but I definitely heard it. So I don't know whether or not, you know, there's maybe whoever's in charge of, you know, sound mixing at Sky in the ground is very firmly Enoch in and just thought, fuck it, I'll just turn them down. Whether this was some calculated thing by Sky or whoever controls the audio, I don't know, but that is what it sounded like. It did sound like they just were like, no, we're not going to fan the flames of this.
The conspiracy theorists might say that obviously the Premier League's biggest customer is Sky Sports, and the Premier League will want to keep Premier League chairman on side, and so there may have been a directive from Tottenham to Sky saying, you better fucking tone this down. I can't believe that's the case. And to be fair, in the second half, you did hear it and it wasn't muted. And that's what makes me suggest that in the first half it was, because if the group of fans, Enoch Out fans singing this song, were drowned out by the other fans in the first half, why weren't they when they were winning? Why would they suddenly go, all right, we'll let them sing this time when Spurs were winning? I wonder what do you think? What do you think Daniel Levy? Because we haven't discussed this. What do you think Daniel Levy's thinking when he hears that? Because it's three games on the bounce now. It's not going to go away, I don't think, this time. I don't think it will go away. Even if we beat Man City and even Arsenal and Man City, I think the appetite that there is a bit between the teeth now. I think. Or what do you think, Rick?
Don't know. I just always think that because he's always sitting with his sons, isn't he? Or son. And like they're singing about Levy, but he's just sitting there thinking, "Fucking hell, being mugged off in front of my son, like this is bullshit." Like, or if his wife says,
"I just think it damages his ego."
Off. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. Yeah, totally. Like, if, to be in a job like that, and about kind of transfers and business, and yeah, of course, it damages his reputation. But I mean, the main thing about it, obviously, I don't think he's sitting there thinking, fucking, I'm being coded off and my son's going to think I'm a dick. I do think he
imagine if he just grabbed Josh Levy's head and then just put his hand over his ears. Don't listen to that.
Tied a scarf around his head like so he just couldn't hear.
Wouldn't it be great if he just started going, la, 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 la. I can't hear you, la, 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 la.
Or Levy just doubled down. He just stood up and was just going, doing the arms are waving like, come on then, fucking, is that all you got?
Well, I think he just got his see you.
Wads
of money
you outside
out.
And open you up like a can just, of fucking beans, son.
Yeah. Like, oh, loads of wads of money.
Blowing his nose of 50s. Fuck off.
What do you think that the damage is already done? It's already set in, like, is it already set that there is nothing, there's very little that Daniel Levy can do even in this January transfer window to quell the voices of the Enoch Out crowd? Like, would Pedro Porro and Marcus Edwards, which has been mooted this week, be enough to satisfy the Tottenham Hotspur fan base?
No.
What would then? That's still 70. That's 75 million euros. What would then? How much money do people think we have? Or is the damage already been done? There's too much has gone past. Is that what the problem is?
I think there's a bit of both. I think the damage has already been done. I think it's a kind of... from previous seasons, Redknapp, where there was that time to invest when we were quite close, didn't invest. There was the time with Poch, very close, just needed a sprinkling, this and that. We went fucking two transfer windows, didn't we? We didn't sign a player. That is madness.
It is madness. But remember, and you have to caveat it always. Where we were spending £1 billion on a stadium. I know people don't like it.
I know that. I know they don't like it. But this is what is playing into why people feel this way.
Yeah.
And it's that investment in the.
There's always a reason why Levy won't do it, isn't there? There's always a reason, like Redknapp, the court case. Pochettino, you know, either doesn't want players or we're moving to Wembley, it always seems to be a reason why he won't pull the trigger.
Yeah, now is COVID. We had COVID. That's we've got to wait for that. Kip McKinnon.
Well, everybody had COVID, didn't they? Everybody had COVID.
I mean,
John doesn't even believe in COVID. John's furious because he doesn't believe in COVID and Spurs didn't spend.
More lies. I had it for a week. It didn't stop me spending money. That's all I'm going to say. So what's his excuse? Well, I can't smell, so I can't make transfers. Grow up, Daniel.
Grow up. Boys, imagine the scenes if we beat Arsenal and lose to City. Do you want to, like, if we beat Arsenal, do you want to lose to City, Rick?
Well, no, I never want us to lose, if I'm honest. But there was that time where I did want us to lose.
Man United.
Exactly.
Final game of the season, they needed us to beat them, us to beat United at Old Trafford. Arsenal had already won, I think, and they were cheering on Spurs.
Didn't we went 1-0 up as well, didn't we?
Les Ferdinand,
and I was sitting there thinking, no. The first time in my life when that ball goes in and we go 1-0 up, fuck's sake, Tottenham.
Yeah, like Les Ferdinand wheeled away and celebrating. Like, what are you celebrating? Like, this would mean us finishing 13th.
Oh, fucking hell.
I'm going to put it on record now and say I would happily see Spurs lose against Manchester City if we beat Arsenal. Because the alternative is you're waiting for Arsenal to slip up. And it's one game for us. This could win them the title.
Yeah.
I don't want Spurs to lose ever, except in this instance, where if they lost, I wouldn't feel anywhere.
I don't think I can say it out loud, but if that's the way the cookie crumbled, then, I'll eat those crumbs off the table.
Look, the worst case scenario, regardless of what we do this season, is if Arsenal win the league.
Yeah.
Anything we can do to stop that, including giving up points to Man City, that should be a part of the common good.
Yeah, I'm in. You've just sold me there. I've changed my mind again. Within 3.5 seconds.
I'll tell you what is actually going to happen, though. We're going to lose to Arsenal and beat City.
Fuck
no, don't do that. I don't want that one. I don't want that version.
Because
Kane to score a hat trick and break Greaves' record against the Scum, and then he injures himself like a very small strain and can't play against City. There you go.
Yeah. We've got a question here from Nick Smith. Actually, 6 points against City this month. Eventually, sees us finish fourth, but hands the title to Woolwich. Yes or no?
Nope.
No. Either finish mid-table.
Yeah.
If we directly handed Arsenal the title, who gives a shit if we have Champions League football next season? Who gives a fuck? People would be out there going, small time mentality, you have to think about us, not them. Fuck that.
Yeah,
fuck
I don't
them.
Give a shit, mate. Yeah, fuck off. Yeah.
Let's see if we can convince Ricky to change his mind.
I've been such a loose tongue and with my swearing in this episode. I'm just jolly, this is what happens when you win. When you win, you just get giddy, man. You're just like, let's go, let's just mess around.
Yeah, nothing to worry about.
Come on.
It's all have fun. Fingers out, dicks out, everything. our next six fixtures stand like this: Portsmouth home in the FA Cup, Arsenal, Man City away, Fulham away, Fulham are flying, Man City at home, Leicester away. That's horrible.
That is quite grim.
I keep thinking, when are we going to play the easy games? But we lost all the easy ones. So this is our comeuppance. This is what we get. Well, we should have played Man City back in September, then, shouldn't we? So this is what. When are Arsenal playing Man City? This must be soon, right? Anyway, fuck them. Portsmouth. Just a quick thing on Portsmouth. We tweeted last night that GIF or the little video of Jeremy in Peep Show when he gives a homeless man two tickets and says, "Take these. The second half will be shit." A Portsmouth fan quote tweeted it and went, "I think we're going to fucking do these lot." They think they're shit. I think they're going to do this. And then we obviously went on to win 4-0. But I think they, the little scamps, those little scamps down there, I think they think that they're going to come to White Hart Lane and do us. And they bloody well could. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want to give them anything. I like the fact that they ask, can we have, we've got 8,500 tickets. Can we have some more, please, Spurs? And we're like, nah, selling well, mate. We're selling the tickets. It's not a problem. Is the top half open? Or have they closed the top half?
I don't know, actually. I've not looked.
Couldn't give a shit, could you, Rick?
Nah, really. Nah, not at all, man. Fucking Portsmouth, isn't it? 8,000. Fucking, that's quite good, actually, them bringing 8,000. I remember as a kid, like, being at the old White Hart Lane and we'd be playing in the FA Cup and they would get half of the South Stand. Mm. And whatever little team it would be, they would come and they would all have their, like, the team's coloured balloons and let them all off and stuff like that. And it was such a, like, proper good day out for the small teams. It was quite good fun. But it was always great as well when you just absolutely folded them up in front of their fans. That, you know, they actually, there was that little tiny thing, the belief that they were going to beat Tottenham at Tottenham. And then we just screwed them up in a little ball, slapped, fucking threw them out. That's Rick, it, done.
Do you or do you not want to tell your Crystal Palace story, your Portsmouth stories?
I think everyone's heard it enough.
I know, yeah, we don't play Portsmouth that often, and this is your chance to say it again. Do you know what he's talking about, John Boy?
Oh, I want to hear it.
He doesn't even know.
He does know. He does. But I will retell the story. It was the Sol Campbell's return game at White Hart Lane when he signed for Portsmouth. There was an increased police presence at the ground, inside and out. And I was just going into the old ground with my old man, and I had my little man bag with me. And as I was walking through, I saw a dog next to me, and I was like, "Oh, that's fucking weird. Like, we don't like normally have like dogs in the ground." But I didn't think anything of it, just waiting for my dad, and I was sitting next to him. And then as I kind of out my periphery, I saw this policeman marching over. So what the fuck does he want? And then as he was marching over and I looked at the dog, I was just like the pennies dropping. And what the policeman says,
I love the fact you didn't give the dog a second thought. Like, dog doing inside the stadium?
Nah. It's just, it was akin to walking in the park and seeing a squirrel. Oh, there's a squirrel. It's like, oh, there's a dog. Even though I'd never seen a dog in a stadium before, it still didn't dawn on me. And the policeman said, this dog has, it's kind of recognised that you may have illegal substances on you. Do you have any? I said, not to my knowledge. I don't think I do. He said, we're going to have to take you away and search you. And I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. And I said to my dad that I'll see him in a minute. I'm just off to be searched. And my dad, like, rolled his eyes. And the policeman was like, you're not going back into the ground no matter what. So I kind of went into this.
You didn't find anything? That's stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So I got marched into this holding area, which was, like, underneath the belly of the ground. Fuck knows where that was. And there was, like, loads of pissed up people, coked up people. It was just, like, proper wild animals there. And there's me in my zipped up parka jacket with my blue and white scarf and a Tottenham hat sitting there. And there was this, like, police chief at the end of this big table. And he was, like, called my name up. They did do the search on me. And there was, like, a thumbnail worth of weed in a little baggie that was in my bag that I didn't even know it was in there. But yeah, and then they called me up, and the kind of superintendent, whoever he was, the chief, was like, so what are we doing for? And he was like, our possession of cannabis. And he held up this enormous bag, like A3 bag, and in the tiniest corner was this bit of weed. And he was just like, are we really going to do him for this?
I love the fact Ricky would have looked at the massive bag and then look back at the police.
Yeah. Please, sir. Please don't kick me out. And then he said, we've already done the paperwork. So they give me a warning and they kick me out of the stadium. And then I went to the Bellinaire and watched the game on the TV on my own with no one there. Just literally Tottenham Portsmouth was next to me, and I had a ticket, and I was in the pub next door watching it on my own.
Supping a little warm beer.
Yeah.
Didn't you lose your season
£10
ticket?
£10 from my
I think I did get a ban of 3 games or something like that. Mm. Yeah, yeah, I did, yeah.
Did you tell everyone that you got your ban for smashing a load of Portsmouths? There were 6 of them come at me, and I fucking done them all. Bosh, bosh, bosh.
I think, like,
yeah.
It might get a little bit tasty. I mean, there's a lot of family and stuff, but Portsmouth and Spurs always been a little... And Portsmouth-Southampton's always been a little bit edgy, I found.
Well, Portsmouth used to have a proper decent crew, didn't they?
I think, yeah, so did Southampton, I think. I don't know, you know about this stuff.
I don't know. I can't remember. It's like it's a number like 657 crew or some shit.
What's your favorite name of a hooligan crew?
Oh, fucking hell. Who was it?
I quite like the Migs. Was it Mig crew? Was it Mig? There's Luton in it. Migs.
Yeah, Luton's Migs.
Men in gear. Men in gear.
Men in gear.
I think it was my favorite name was Burnley, and it was I think it was like the Suicide Squad. Something like that. Fucking mayhem. Just like loads of bods in from Lancashire just doing nothing, eating pies, fighting. Suicide Squad. Well, funny name.
Was there a baby, something like a baby?
Yeah, there was. There's been a baby squad.
I
can't remember who that is. But yeah, I did. Used to read a lot about that stuff.
Yeah.
Good. It's fun.
Good. And then finally, two things. Richie says, should we bench Harry Kane for the rest of the season so he doesn't beat Greaves' record and wants to stay next season? It's a great plan.
So it's one way of doing it. Yeah, it's not bad.
That is a good plan, actually. Well done.
Yeah,
well done.
Well done, Richie. And then finally, Direct Debit. He says, Brian Hilasevsky. So it's good. I thought you'd like that, John. You like a little pun and play,
it's
you?
Good. Remember we had that problem with, well, I say we, very much me, with Deki being called Deki and not Kulu. What would Brian Hill be in the weird made-up scenario? Bile. B-Y-I-L,
isn't
it? B-Y? Brill. Brill.
Do you know what? Everybody claimed about that Kulusevski, how he got his nickname Deki. Everybody claimed, and they were 100% sure, they had it right. And everybody had different ideas about how it came. Some people going, well, it was Conte said it because we called him Deki. He said he preferred Deki, so we called him Deki. Someone said it's the first 2 letters and the last 2 letters of his name. There was another one. Fucking no one knows, but everyone claims to know.
Yeah, I put the poll up and gave the like 4 different reasons. And it was pretty much an even split, which is my exact point, which is that it's fucking bollocks.
No, you was wrong. No, you were wrong, John.
Whichever way it came out of it, you were wrong.
I can't remember. One of them was just, should we just call him Kulu? I think that one in the end. That I can't remember mean, which one.
Do you say Deki or
Kulu? Deki is bollocks.
Deki is bollocks. I don't give a shit what he wants to be called. I'm calling him Deki. Luke Kulu, rather. Fucking, he can like it.
Exactly. I'm calling him Kulu. You don't get to pick your own nicknames.
Yeah.
It's like The Office and the Og Monster. What's your real name? Ajan. Right, we're calling you that. It's a good name.
Have you got any mates that are called, have a terrible nickname, like a horrible nickname that's stuck?
I think I told this story about this kid in my school. I can't really say his name. I'll just make up his name. His name was Scott Smith, right? And he was in a fight with someone at one of my friends at school. They had a massive tear up. And then, you know what it's like after the fight? Because obviously people don't get like knocked out. So people just let him split off into 2 different groups. So one with one with the other. So this geezer called Scott Smith ends up running inside to like the locker area. And then we don't see him. He like disappears. And me and one of my other friends, Luke, go looking for him just to see like his face is smashed in or what's happened to him. And we go into like the toilets near our lockers and it fucking reeks of shit, like the most disgusting smell ever. We go in there and we see that there's shit all up the walls and everything. And we're like, fucking hell, that is grim. Like, that is the worst thing ever. And then I don't know if you used to have it at your school, but you used to have like that weird afternoon assembly thing that was like just for your year group. And so everyone's like marching down to like the front hall. In the reception, this geezer's sitting there with his full school uniform except for his trousers, and he's just got like grey tracksuit bottoms and a lost property. So we put two and two together and realised that this geezer's obviously shit himself after the fight. And he just referred to, after that, was just referred to as shit. All right, shit.
Oh, that's a tough one to go.
Why was it all up the walls? Like, where, why?
I don't
like...
know what he was doing, Rick.
He had nervous poo. He had a fight and had a nervous poo.
It was like, you know, in Train Spotting, when he's got to go into the toilet after the suppositories. Yeah. That's what it fucking looked like. It was hell on earth in there.
Have you ever walked into like an exploded cubicle where someone's just gone and exploded? I went to Spain, Benidorm. It was fucking boiling. It was absolutely boiling. It was a nice part of Benidorm, right? There is a nice part-ish. Anyway, we'll come off the beach. We've been on these kayaks and we'd gone out to this cove and it was lovely, right? We've jumped in the water, crystal clear water, snorkeling, you know, kayaked all the way back. We had a lovely afternoon. And we went to this portable toilet for a wee and there was shit everywhere. It was like someone had gone on there, held their ass in the air, and just as on a 90 degree angle, as a circle, like a funnel of shit all up the walls, all up the ceilings. Like how I've had some bad experiences sitting on the toilet, but I've never exploded a room.
Yeah, I have. quite a few times.
Go on, go on, Rick.
Well, mate, I keep forgetting. It's like main pod, and like I'm just. There was a time where
an accident. No one's gonna not like you're not gonna get sacked from your job because you had an accident once.
No, I know, but I was at Yates's, had a dicky tummy.
Start every good story.
Yeah, exactly. I had a dicky tummy. It was quite early in the night as well, actually. And I went. I needed to go for a turnout, and I kind of pulled my boxers down, and as all the toilets are absolutely fucking caked in urine. So I just sat there and hovered, but I may have had a few drinks. I was probably not hovering as I should be and maybe leaning a bit more forward. And I just needed to get it out, do it quickly, wipe and get out of there. So I leant forward, shoved it out, and then And then there was like, I looked for a bit of toilet roll. I used that. But then when I went to throw the toilet roll back into the toilet, there was nothing in the toilet. Absolutely nothing. I was like, what the fuck's going on here? And then I looked and it just sprayed on the cistern above and the side of the wall. Just completely missed the toilet altogether. Like nothing was there. And then I heard the geese on the other side. So he was complaining about the smell. And then I was like, I don't know what to do. So I just like pulled my trouser, opened the cubicle door. I said, I'm really sorry. Walked past him. Walked downstairs, walked out the front entrance, just got a taxi home, didn't tell my mates, didn't tell anyone. That was it. There's been loads of stories like that, loads. I just got bad belly, man. Just stuff happens.
Pointing your arsehole into the toilet and then suddenly...
Well, I was pissed up and I must have just been leaning forward, like in a skiing position, a bit too far.
Because you didn't want to touch the urine cake.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It was a mistake. And when you're trying to hover and you're pissed and just, yeah, it's just a... It happens, man. It happens.
You went straight home to bed. You put yourself to bed straight. Everything will be all right in the morning.
Yeah, there's been a few of those. Yeah.
You got home and went, Mum, what's for dinner? Hopefully it's delicious. Better be delicious. Run up to your bed. Mum, what's for dinner? Better be delicious. Oh, fantastic. What a way to end the podcast. Thank you very much, Rick.
That's all right.
John Boy.
Peace and love, my
friend.
Come
you Spurs, and we'll see you next week.
In a bit. Flat plates and prick. We can get sticky in the mini sucking willy. When you're getting grilly, yeah, you're gonna bang the millie. Bang, bang.
Social Podcast Network.